a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Natasha Sun, and I am from Columbus, South Dakota. And you also wanted me after school? I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry.
It's kind of a Monday morning for me, too.
Okay. Sorry about laughing. No, very good. Thank you. We appreciate that you're here. Just a reminder to turn off cell phones for everyone here, and Secretary will call the roll.
Bogalka?
Here.
Buell?
Here.
Jensen?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Maher?
Here.
Lederman?
Here.
Holine?
Here.
There is a quorum.
A quorum is present. Now we will move for an approval of the minutes from last meeting. Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Buell. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I just want to remind everyone to please sign in before testifying. We are going to, and then also for anyone who is here to testify who has a handout, the handouts will go through the page and then to the committee, and all questions and answers will go through the chair. So with that, we are going to start off today's committee meeting with a brief presentation by the South Dakota Pipeline Association.
Good morning. On behalf of the South Dakota Pipeline Association, thank you to the committee for the opportunity to visit with you. I'm going to take just a few minutes
Please first identify who you are?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. My name is Steve Roberts. I'm the Director of Training for Paradigm Liaison Services. We're located out of corporate headquarters in Wichita, Kansas. We actually represent and have teamed with the South Dakota Pipeline Association in providing pipeline safety meetings across the United States. In 2012, we did public awareness meetings, 950 of them in 42 states, and very honored to be, again, teamed up with the South Dakota Pipeline Association. What I wanted to do very quickly this morning before I introduce the president of the South Dakota Pipeline Association is just give you a little perspective on what we do at the national level so you kind of have an idea of what a great job the South Dakota Pipeline Association is doing as far as pipeline safety is concerned to stakeholder audiences that include the emergency officials, all of them, local public officials who, as you know, often hold the purse strings for these responding agencies, and then the excavators and contractors that go out and stick the shovels and the picks in the ground, all in a united goal for pipeline safety. So we prevent the damage before it happens through the 811 system and the one call law in the state, and then getting together with the local pipeline operators at these meetings. We have one here this evening. I think Troy's going to talk to you a little bit more detail about that. Coming up. But we have between 2.4 and 2.5 million miles of pipeline that run across the United States. 65% of the energy that we use is transported through these pipeline systems. Now, as it relates to the great state of South Dakota, and I've taken this from the PUC's website, the pipeline safety program has jurisdiction over 4,664 miles of transmission and distribution pipelines and serves over 190,000 South Dakota customers. Again, the main purpose for me being here, we work with six other associations in the United States, over 550 pipeline companies nationwide. My point in being here is not to sell you on Paradigm, but it's really to get you to hopefully understand and appreciate from the few minutes we have this morning what the South Dakota Pipeline Association is doing to spread the safe message of digging and pipeline response if there is a message. We have six other associations that we work with and through throughout the United States, and you can be proud of the South Dakota Pipeline Association. Its 19 members come together, and they do an excellent job. In fact, we use some of the things that they do in this state and the other associations as far as from our perspective in representing them. So with that, thank you again for the opportunity, and I'll introduce Troy Steyer with the South Dakota Pipeline Association. And if you have any questions, we'll be around later for that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And while you're coming forward, I guess I should explain to anyone listening or those in the room. The idea was, I know in Commerce and Energy so far this year we've been, I don't think we've had a single energy bill, but the idea is that energy is part of our committee title, and it might actually come towards us sometime, and I just wanted to, oh yeah, I know that they're coming, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to to at least delve on the surface into this subject that I think a lot of people think they know a lot about, but perhaps and probably not as much as what they could or should. So, and I know that the SDPBA or SDPA is hosting informational meeting tonight, and the idea was I don't know how many of the legislators will actually be able to attend, so I thought for at least Commerce and Energy it would be a good idea for at least you to meet and greet. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Troy Steyer. I work for New Star Energy. I'm pipeline safety for them, and I am the president of the South Dakota Pipeline Association. First of all, I just...
Would you move the microphone a little closer?
Sure.
Thank you.
First, I want to just say, explain what the SDPA is, for sure. SDPA is a group of pipeline operators in the state that came together to promote pipeline safety, to put out a consistent message across the state for everyone. People will misunderstand that when they first hear about us, that we're just coming on board and putting this stuff out there. Actually, prior to 2007, there was 19, and the 19 operators in the state were putting out 19 different messages. Part of coming together with the associations is just that, a consistent message across the state. Stakeholder audiences that we go out to spread the message are the emergency responders, public officials, excavators, and the general public. The South Dakota Pipeline Association hits three of those four stakeholders. The general public, that's done by individual company, usually along the right-of-way of their pipeline is the biggest part where the general public comes in. The meeting tonight is... I was kind of hoping that everybody here had gotten an invitation to a meeting across the state. This is the second of 14 meetings that will be across the state. I do have packets that I want to hand out for you guys. There's a CD in there that will tell everything that goes on with the meetings, everything that goes out to the emergency responders, contacts in there. The program itself is in there, PowerPoint. And then there's also a list of the meetings that are across the state coming up. Mulbridge, Huron, Hot Springs, Rapid City, Belle Fourche, Buffalo, Aberdeen, Brookings, Watertown, Sioux Falls, Yankton, and Mitchell. So at the top, inside that packet, at the top, you'll see a link that you can go in and RSVP, and please come to a meeting if you can. Couple things you asked for were safety records and safety issues with pipelines. The safety issues or the safety records, that's kind of an individual company. We could spend days and days talking about that. Depends on how far you want to go back in history and where things have come. The safety issues, I'll touch on that. Our biggest safety issue with pipelines are third-party damage. What we do to help prevent that is we promote 81 call before you dig or 811, call 811. We're partners with the South Dakota One Call System. We send out magazines and newsletters and different things to the three stakeholders that I talked about earlier. And we just recently teamed with Hefty, the Ag PhD guys. They're promoting a lot of tiling right now on the fields where they are going in with some big equipment and tearing some things up. And we're just trying to get the word. They're letting us come into their meetings and their clinics and promoting 811. We just did one in Sioux Falls. We're doing one up in Fargo, which... that's where they are next, and we got one deal coming up in July that they invited us to. A couple of things that you guys could possibly help us with. Dig Safe Month is the month of April, promoting Dig Safe Month somehow. I don't know how we could do that together. Also, National Dig Safe Day is August 11th, 8-1-1. You know, putting some stuff out there, helping us out there. So what it comes down to is the SDPA is strictly a vehicle to promote pipeline safety. With that, I'll, if anybody has any questions. Also, I want to introduce Gordy Woods here. He's with the South Dakota Interstate Pipeline. He's based out here in Pierre. And then over here, Robert Latimer with TransCanada Pipeline came in case there's any questions they can help with.
Mr. Chair, we'll allow some latitude if someone wanted to address a question to the two gentlemen introduced. Otherwise, the chair will open up for any questions for Mr. Styler. Senator Maher.
Talk a little bit about the pipeline company that's moving into Belle Fourche. Can you do that? And who they are? And
I could possibly do that. Is it TransCanada? Is that the pipeline?
There's wasn't there a manufacturing company that's moving into Belle Fourche?
Pipeline, I mean the actual pipe.
Oh, okay. All right.
Plastic pipe.
Okay. All right. They're going to be manufacturing.
Manufacturing. Okay.
But that actually is a good question. So you deal just with the safety issues after the pipe might be already installed, not
correct.
Necessarily in the manufacturing or installation?
No, we are 100% transportation.
Okay. I had a question. Anyone else first? You had referenced that you serviced about 190,000 South Dakota customers. Now, that's a good portion of the state. Is it spread pretty much evenly throughout the state, or is there a larger hub that depends upon your services more than others?
The 190,000 are the customers that take natural gas within the state, and that's spread out between the 19 operators that are in here. NuStar Energy, what I am, we're a hazardous liquid pipeline, so we transport gasoline, diesel fuel, and propane, where Northern Border, for example, they transport the natural gas and then go into the distribution part. Gordy Woods, he is a his company is a transportation on natural gas, and then it goes to MDU, right? The distribution company in Pierre is MDU. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's about that.
Any further questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And those dates for the upcoming meetings throughout the state are listed in the packet. I know there was one up in Watertown that I was not going to be able to attend because I'm out here in Pierre. Okay. But for those who can make it tonight, even for a little bit, that would be appreciated. It's at View 34. At what time?
Starts at registration starts at 5:30.
Okay.
So,
thank you very much, and just direct the committee members to the packet. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
With that, the chair is going, and thank you very much. With that, the chair is going to slightly alter the order of the bills. We have many people coming in from out of town for Senate Bill 77. We are going to move Senate Bill 77 up to first on the docket today. And with that, we will consider Senate Bill 77, an act to require certain information be provided to debtors when entities are collecting certain debts. Any proponents to testify?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Senator Mark Kirkby from Rapid City. And starting off, I just want to sincerely appreciate the time that you're allowing me to present to you for your consideration, Senate Bill 77. It does appear that either I am attempting to step on somebody's turf or have stirred up a little something, because I believe that there certainly are individuals from the opponent side that will educate you on the factual history on the credit scenario that we do have in the United States of America and the great state of South Dakota. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, specifically where I am addressing this bill for your consideration, my full-time position in Rapid City, I have a lot of titles with the Salvation Army. Through our social services perspective, we certainly do offer that referral perspective as well as in-house financial consultation on our clients needing a little support or trying to help them get out of that financial situation that they're in. So I do certainly have some albeit I would not call it any amount of expertise, but I certainly do have a substantial amount of experience in this related field. And also with that, Mr. Chairman, we are fortunate with our organization, those United Way agencies in Rapid City, an awful lot, again, that referral network. We do have an awful lot of communication and cooperation and that ability to refer individuals out to other individuals like the Consumer Credit Counseling Service of the Black Hills. This bill is brought to you on a sincere attempt to avoid that doomsday scenario that those clients certainly are facing. There's a reason that that obligation is turned over to that third party or that collection agency. Nine times out of ten, or even maybe a little bit more than that, they do not have the financial means to be honorable to that obligation, or they would not be in that scenario. From a personal perspective, it was certainly brought to my personal awareness about 2 years ago. I'm married to a very accident-prone individual. Quite certain that she will not die of natural causes. It certainly will be a horse accident. That's my wife, Cheryl. So one of her many horse accidents, through the surgery, the therapy, all that treatment, everything that was done, I can assure you that we had a very a significant amount of medical bills showing up in our mailbox. Addressing each and every one of them, whether it be through our insurer or that actual provider, there was a phone call that was made to me at my business from a local collection agency. Just starting out at the top, we have this obligation from some medical services that your wife has incurred and whatever date it was, seeking payment of $400 and some odd. Had absolutely no idea what she was talking about, and it happened to be a female on the other end of this phone call. So it certainly will be honorable to my obligations. Please send me something in writing so I can review this and we'll get it taken care of. That is not in their protocol. They do not have that courtesy, that dignity, that ability to be compassionate about that individual on the other end of that phone while they're looking at their computer screen to hit that print button and put it in an envelope and address it to Mark Kirkaby at 315 East Philadelphia Street in Rapid City, South Dakota. And that, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is exactly what I'm seeking to do. To avoid that doomsday that far and away the majority of those individuals that will be affected by 77, to allow them that opportunity to actually look at this. Now, within the opponent testimony, sometime or another, this information was in fact supplied to that resident. There could be a life-changing opportunity at that residence. There could be a separation in that household. They could have frankly picked it up and thrown it in the mailbox. There could be any other reasons that original copy wasn't there. But I do believe passionately that is it too much to ask after 30 or 60 or 90 or even 120 days to be able to request a copy from this third-party collection agency to give me that position, that honorable position, to review what they're contracted and paid commission on to collect for that other entity. And primarily, I'm focused on this bill, on the medical collection agencies. There's no question that's the highest amount of any inventory or those accounts that a collection agency has. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that certainly is my short, sweet, hopefully semi-compelling testimony. I have no prepared statements to offer to you other than the fact that in the old documents of Consumer Credit Counseling Service of the Black Hills, their January and February issue of just this year, They do state in their monthly magazine that third-party debt collectors are required to supply information about the debt they're trying to collect to you, the consumer, in writing if you request it. Mr. Chairman, I would certainly stand by for any questions. If not, I certainly would welcome the opportunity for any rebuttal or closing arguments regarding Senate Bill 77. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kirkaby, would it be all right if I took a look at that? The chair will open it up for any further proponent testimony. Any further proponents? Moving on to opponent testimony. Opponent testimony on Senate Bill 77.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota Collectors Association. And we have several people here that will answer some of the questions that you heard. But the Bible for collection is the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act, which is being passed out now. And the reference, it's actually 20 pages long. It's put together to protect the consumer. And the issues of notification, and that we have people in the industry that will, I'm sorry.
And has that been handed out?
Over, yeah. That will show how this is done. And the thing that I would caution you on, anytime you take an industry that might go across state lines, and you have a federal law that makes everybody, all the consumers, equal. When we start passing state laws, and I know, for example, the clinics that go across four different state lines, you're creating a problem, and you're creating additional cost. And remember what we're doing here. We're trying to collect for money that was owed. So the cost already is high for both parties. So at this time, I would like to have some of the industry people come up and explain how they carry out this federal law. Thank you.
Any further opponent testimony? Thank you. Sorry, I was a little late on that one.
No, this one. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Adamson. I am a debt collector. I am a legislative chairman for the South Dakota Collectors Association. I've been collecting debts for the last 39 years, so I'm the bad guy that he's talking about. our industry is it's very difficult when you're dealing with a lot of laws and a lot of different types of consumers and a lot of medical debt, just as he said. I mean, it's difficult. The individuals that you're speaking to are in a difficult situation, and you have to make the best out of that situation to help that consumer work through this situation. And as other collectors can probably tell you, most of the time you're working on some type of a payment program or whatever that consumer can do or handle as far as a debt load. One thing that I rise in opposition to this debt for is because we are governed by a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, as Dean Krogman has handed out a brochure on that. We represent about 28 agencies across the state of South Dakota who collect the majority of all the debts in the state of South Dakota. So, and we are bound by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and we are educated on that constantly by our association with updates. I'm also going to pass out a notice from our office that is very consistent with the notices required by law to be sent out to a debtor prior to contact. What I'll do is...
Would you like to hand that out through the page?
I would.
Okay.
Please.
Please, page. And you can continue talking while it's being handed out.
Okay. This particular statement she's getting right now is a position statement. I don't know who received that, but I did send out a position statement to the committee, and she's passing a copy of that out. What I'll do first is, on the first written communication to a debtor, you're required a statement that if a consumer notifies the debt collector in writing within 30 days that the debt or any portion thereof is disputed, the debt collector shall obtain verification of the debt or a copy of the judgment against the consumer and a copy of such verification or judgment will be mailed to the consumer by the debt collector. And it doesn't make a difference if you are a small debt collection agency or if you employ 200 debt collectors. You are all of us are bound by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Here's the laws protecting the consumers. I mean, that's a lot of law. What we're stating right now is if this bill was passed, I would also have you send a copy of this around. Thank you. That's a statement that I just read. If this law is passed, what it does is it assumes that every debtor is disputing every account. Now, we handle thousands and thousands and thousands of new debts every year. So with this law, you would be required to send out a statement on every one of those prior to contact. That would cause undue burden to the businesses that I'm representing here today, including myself as a business person in Yankton. That would be totally unnecessary when, in fact, the debtor is protected, and if somebody does not supply that information after it's requested by a debtor, you have a chance of very stiff fines by federal law or imprisonment. Now, I don't know any of my debt collectors that want to go to prison. So, and everybody is trained to handle disputes and furnish itemized statements. There's also a section of federal code here I'm also going to hand out that has to do with, thank you, that has to do with the, if the consumer notifies a debt collector in writing within 30 days, a 30-day period described in this section, that the debt or any portion thereof is disputed, or that the consumer requests the names and addresses of the original creditor, the debt collector shall cease collection of the debt and any portion thereof until the debt collector obtains verification of the debt or a copy of the judgment or the names and addresses of the original creditor and a copy of such verification or judgment or names of the original creditor is mailed to the consumer by the debt collector. So that is already law, and anybody that violates that law is subject to federal jurisdiction. With that, I'd be open to answering any questions.
You can stick around for that. We're going to go through other opponent testimony to make sure perhaps a question from the committee might be answered by anyone else up here.
Okay. Very much.
Any further opponent testimony? And we'll just ask...
Sure. You can pass that around.
I don't think the committee meeting will last that long, Senator Maher. Any further opponents on Senate Bill 77? And just a notice for the committee and those who may be here, I notified the two people who have signed up to testify on Senate Bill 57. We will defer action on 57 until Thursday. That's the only one on the docket for today that did not have people coming from out of town, so that was the easiest one to defer. So 57 is going to be moved to Thursday, and thank you. Please identify yourself. And
I'm Mark Kisley. I own and operate the Brookings Credit Bureau and Collection Agency out of Brookings, South Dakota, and I am a member of the South Dakota Collectors Association. A lot of the points that I was going to bring up, Greg has already discussed those. There's one point that I felt I need to speak on. There's another federal rule. It's called the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act. It's called HIPAA. What that is that's a third-party collection agency's responsibility to keep aid debtors' medical information private. So if we get the medical information, we get it, we put it in their file, it's under lock and key. What I gather out of part of Senate Bill 77 is they would like that information sent directly with the first notification. Here's one of the problems we run into. People move. Brookings, South Dakota is a college town. We have a lot of apartment buildings, a lot of mobile home parks, and people move. College student moves. Parents, grandmas, and grandpas, they all move. If we were to take that piece of legislation and send that medical documentation out with the initial contact letter, and that person is moved, especially an apartment building or a mobile home park, the next renter that rents that place is going to get that information, unless that debtor left a forwarding information. A lot of times they don't leave it. And according to federal law, if they don't notify us within 30 days, we assume they got the letter. Now, we won't know if the debtor got the letter or if the new renter got the letter. If they did, and they're friends with whoever that debtor was, we're in violation of the HIPAA laws. Simple. And again, fines and penalties for the collection agency. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony?
Good morning. My name is Michael Fromnecht, and I'm with Total Card, Inc. I act as the Senior Vice President of Recovery Collections. I would like to thank the chairman for moving this up. So would my daughter. 3.5 hours is quite a trek. Thanks for listening to me. The one thing that I would like to expand on a little bit is consumer privacy is extremely important in our business. Personal information is something that we have to hold on to dearly as a collection agency to make sure that we don't do the wrong thing with that person's information. Not only do we violate HIPAA laws by sending out this requested letter in the bill, we also violate fair debt laws. Every time we send that letter without knowing that we're sending it to the right person, which in the letter that the gentleman gave you, which is, and I haven't seen the letter, but it gives a customer 30 days to dispute the debt. And what I would say is, if the collection agency that did not send the senator the information that he should have sent, well, that collection agency, they violated federal law, and federal law should take care of that. What concerns me about the bill is federal law guides how we do business. If state law makes me break that federal law, then I've got trouble as a business owner. And I'm concerned about that because I don't want to violate federal law. We all are in business to try and take care of the consumers. And our industry gets a black eye. And we get a black eye because, unfortunately, in every industry, there are people who don't do it right. But the majority of our business, we do it right. And we want to take care of the consumers. And we want to make sure that we give them the best possible deal to pay back their legal and just obligation. And this bill will make it impossible for us to not break federal law, because every time we do it, we're violating the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. So thank you for letting me speak. And keep in mind, we all want to take care of the consumer. I don't want to see that person's personal information opened up by the wrong person. And it's going to happen if this bill comes into play, because the wrong person is going to get the wrong data, and they're going to do something bad with it. And that's what I have to say, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony? Oh, sorry. I thought they were coming up to testify. Any further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 77?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, excuse me, my name is Lauren Pankratz. I'm the registered lobbyist for Sanford Health. You have heard from the experts. We are here as an opponent. A couple of points that I might make is, one, because Senate Bill 77 limits this specifically to medical expenses, it would appear, though, that it's targeting a particular industry and business that has debt collection issues. And we follow the federal act, as has been explained earlier, and so it would appear as though what is being asked for is redundant in terms of what people who are involved in collecting debt already have to comply with respect to the federal law. So we would urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 77. Thank you.
Any further opponent testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deb Fisher-Clemens with Avera Health. We are part of an entity that does collection. We put some resources into a group called the Accounts Management, Inc. And just in this last fiscal year, they received 58,633 accounts from medical providers, 58,000, just to, and do send out, according to what you've heard federal law already requires, but if you assume that you need to send an additional expense itemized statement, that alone is $50,000 in postage if you did that for every person. And that would say that if we need to do that, we do it per request already based on law. And so if this is suggesting that there needs to be additionally, even outside of request, that is an exceeding dollar amount that, again, goes to providers, which, of course, is passed on. So we would ask that you see this as an unnecessary and burdensome cost to businesses in South Dakota that are already following federal law, and we would ask for your no vote on Senate Bill 77. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony? Any further opponents? Hearing none, we will allow Senator Kirkby a rebuttal.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Typical odds. There was only six of them, so I guess we're gaining some little head ground on that. The opposition, and there was numerous testimony that this is in violation of federal law. We've all had the opportunity to listen to any argument about that. First of all, the only person that could ever argue that anything that we do is in violation of federal law is left up to the court system. I mean, that's just that typical argument. I can assure you, in drafting this legislation, that's certainly what was addressed. Numerous opponents suggested that not only is the sky is falling down, but the last opponent, that it would be a $50,000 expenditure on their part. Not quite sure where they're getting any of that information. The bill specifically states that if requested, that's the key right there. If that individual specifically asks to see this in writing, please hit that print button on your computer screen and be honorable. Show a little dignity and get it to that individual so that hopefully they can, in fact, be honorable to their debt. And yes, like I said in my opening testimony, I am specifically going after the medical expenses because by far and away, that is the number one obligation that we have there. Additional opposition stated that, you know, we're stretching out into various forms and crossing state lines. Sorry, again, that doesn't hold water. South Dakota has got absolutely no jurisdiction other than the citizens of the great state of South Dakota. I'm glad that you did have your education again from the opponents on exactly what they're required to do. They brought up numerous informational items that simply have absolutely nothing to do with this bill. We all know how that process works. We also had opponent testimony that it came out of their mouth that maybe that individual moved. Maybe they're sending it to the wrong individual. That's great proponent testimony for me. That actually came out of their mouths. And if an individual, again, Mark Kirkaby from 315 East Philadelphia Street in Rapid City, asks to receive this, I'm quite certain that they have the ability to send it to my address and not crossing their fingers that somebody else might get my secretive medical records. Now, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the opponent testimony is not only grasping at things, they're really trying to turn this bill into something that is not. It's plainly drafted. It's adding one minor little word change into something that they already do. I'm just asking for that individual to, heaven forbid, they represent their client just a little better. You imagine the additional revenues that they actually have the opportunity to pull in by actually having that statement in front of that individual that has that ability to write that check or to work out those arrangements with them. I think it's a good bill, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate your favorable consideration. It'll be a fun one to have down on the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Senator Beal.
Senator Kirkaby, would you mind hopping back up for me?
Certainly.
I'm sort of curious. You know, I know you outlined a little bit of your experience with, you know, not being able to get this information, and I'm sure that they mentioned or they're aware that they're subject to federal law in this area. Was that part of the conversation at all, or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Buell, no, it was not. It was not. My conversation that I had some two years ago, I had no choice because that, and I certainly am not going to say that they're all, and it also was, I've never called them bad guys. I guess the opponents also said that. Your back is against the wall, and you will write that check for $400 and some odd because that next step is, in fact, small claims court, and there's going to be a judgment on you.
Thank you. No.
Any further? Actually, before you even bother to get up, there might be another question for you. Any further questions from the committee? The chair has one question. Oh, sorry. Senator Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, how many pieces of mail did you receive about that claim or even the service that was provided to you? That's probably a better term, before you got your collection notice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it's a great question. To be honest with you, I would say that I received zero. They were all addressed to my wife.
The chair will call shenanigans on that answer. Senator Johnston, follow up. Would you like to address the intent of that question, however?
Well, certainly. I would assume that there was at least legally one attempt from that credit collection agency going to 315 East Philadelphia Street. There had to have been.
Any further questions? The chair has one question for you. And I know I'm breaking with my own protocol here by preambling the question, but I'm a little uncomfortable passing a law that seems to be an isolated incident. Do you have any idea on how many other cases this might impact? I mean, I know when it's personal, I know it's very real, but when we're passing a law for the entire state, I'd like to know how many people, you know, what scope of a problem we're trying to correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I don't think that there is any scientific rationale or studies about that. I mean, I think that the best information that I can give you is the opponent testimony coming from Avera Health that last year they had 50,000, and I'll use that form as far as unpaid bills or claims that they're trying to collect from on services that they provided, and they're obligated to receive compensation for that. Several, numerous, thousands. It's a guessing game. I'm quite comfortable that it's not an isolated incident.
Any further questions from the committee? Hearing none. Oh, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Michael Framrock, I believe. Okay. When you send out a notice, you stated that you don't always know if the notice went out to the correct person. That seems to me like that would be a good argument for this bill. Insofar as if someone's on the phone with a medical bill collector and asks for a copy of the bill in question, then I don't see how it's unreasonable to, at that point, you know, like the senator said, just push the send button and take care of it then. Is that being unreasonable?
Well, what I read on the bill and what he set up here are two different things. Because what I read on the bill clearly states that the second letter goes after you push the button. The first letter goes to everybody with all that information. That's how I read the bill. If I'm reading the bill incorrectly, then please someone correct me. But I'm reading the bill to say the second letter is the letter where the customer gets the first letter per the senator's bill. Everybody has to get that information. And I don't know the facts exactly, but Americans move about once a year. And per the bill that I read that brought me out here to Pierre, it said every single person that goes to a collection agency has to get a letter. And then the second letter goes upon request. Well, if that first letter doesn't include the potential personal information, I don't think people have an issue. But the problem with this bill is he wants everybody to send personal information to everybody as a collection agency. The second notice, per the bill that I read, states we will then send it again. And this, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act clearly states in the letter that you get, if someone sends a letter out that doesn't give a debtor or a customer the opportunity to require validation of the debt, then they're in violation of federal law. But the problem with this bill is he wants everything to go in that first letter. And if it does, it's going to end up in the hands of some people that it shouldn't. And that's my issue. My issue is that first letter should be like what you're seeing up there. And then, as the consumer, if you have questions, federal law gives you the opportunity to question that debt. And federal law says, Mr. Fromnick, as a collection agency owner, I want to see these documents. I want to see what you're billing me. And then me, as the collection agency, I do have to push that button. And I do have to send that information to the customer. And if I don't, I can't work the account. I as soon as he calls me and says, Mr. Fromnick, or as soon as I get that dispute, I have to put that account on hold. I have 30 days to justify the validity of that debt per federal law. If I don't, I can't collect on that debt until I do. The problem with the bill is he wants us to send all this personal information day one. And that personal information is a violation of law, not only federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act law, but it's also in direct violation of personal information and privacy information and HIPAA. So I'm going to get sued by violating this law by an attorney that wants to sue me for violation of federal debt, and that's just not fair.
That's my stance on the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Follow-ups?
For the sponsor.
Okay.
Chairman.
Question for the sponsor.
Senator Kirkby, what's your response to what you said? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, diplomatically, I just say that it totally flew over my head. I'm not sure where the testimony came from. There is no requirement in here about sending information out, all this personal information out to everybody. Question that I would present to this committee, I'm not sure who everybody is. Secondly, this bill is drafted from our current legislation. It was pulled out of those manuals. The only thing of any substance that we added to author to seek change on Senate Bill 77 is that last sentence that if requested, you're going to hit that print button and send me a copy. So that, Mr. Chairman, that statement, I would not know how to respond to that because I certainly would not support those comments.
Any further questions? I'll grant a follow-up.
Quickly. Okay. And this isn't something that's going to have to be done to everybody. This is just those select ones who just asked for the information. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Johnston.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Question for the sponsor.
Question.
Senator Kirkby, did I just hear you right that the way I understood what you said was this bill is taken out of current codified law? There are pieces to it except for the last piece. Shouldn't that have just been underlined then?
Mr. Chairman, I guess it certainly could have word for word. I certainly do not know if that was word for word out of statute. I do know that we have very reliable authors within LRC, and there certainly would never be any attempt to violate anything that they're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Senator Maher.
This is maybe a little unorthodox, and you can not follow through with this, but it would be a question for staff. Where's our statute reference for this? There's not even, for example, there's no 32.15.12. There's no reference in this bill of what statutes we are addressing. Would you know that, Amanda?
Mr. Chair, actually, I was not involved in drafting this piece of legislation. I don't know where it came from. I can look into it if you would like me to.
I think that was a good question. Senator Bogalka.
If I may comment on that question.
Mm-hmm.
We do periodically have bills like this that do not have a specific section or code number in them. And they're certainly legal. We can pass whatever we want to, and then it's up to the code counsel within LRC to place it in the law book where he deems fit. You do not need to specify that in the bill.
We still technically are on questions. Any further questions? I guess the chair will have an open-ended question for either side. Does anyone know what part of South Dakota codified law this would touch upon, specifically any statute?
I do not have. Do I need to come up here?
Yeah, I believe you do. Yes.
Michael Fromnick again. Thank you. I don't believe it's state law. I believe what was taken is federal law, and it comes straight out of the FDCPA. That's my understanding.
Does anybody have the actual code with them?
I do. The actual federal code?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
He's got it. I think he brought it along.
Okay, yeah, state code.
But it's not state code.
It's not state code.
Okay, the answer for those who are listening is it was not state code, it was federal code, which has been a topic throughout this testimony. So as far as what aspect is you know, does this potentially put us in violation of federal law and vice versa, and things like that. We still are open for questions. Hearing none, the chair will close for questions and open it up for discussion from the committee. Discussion and or action then. Senator Jensen.
I just want to make a comment. I think the bill's headed in the right direction. I understand the intent of this, but I think it needs to go back to the drawing board and be revisited at a later time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I make a motion to defer to the 41st day.
Motion to defer to the 41st day, moved by Senator Johnston. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Maher. The motion is to move Senate Bill 77 to the 41st day. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll. Oh, sorry. Is there any discussion on that? Sorry.
No.
I apologize. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Yeah.
Which did he say? Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Bogalka?
No.
Colleen?
Aye.
One no.
Thank you. Motion to move Senate Bill 77 to the 41st day has been passed by a vote of 6-1. The chair would like to thank Senator Kirkaby for bringing this, and I think this might be something that we will hear again next year. With that, the chair will notify the committee. The following bills have been properly vetted, and I do believe that we will be able to move through them at a pretty good order. With that said, we will move to Senate Bill 61, an act to allow licensed insurance agents to act as consultants in certain circumstances. The chair will give about 30 seconds to allow those who came to testify for 77 to leave the room without causing a commotion. And we would like to thank everyone who came from out of town and came to testify. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Department of Labor and Regulation, Division of Insurance. Senate Bill 61 comes to you to address an issue that's been kind of a problem issue for the Division of Insurance for a number of years. For as long as I can recall in my tenure with the division, there's been questions and concerns about where the dividing line is, what can be done as a consultant versus an agent, when can fees be collected, and that kind of thing. Director Scheiber also heard those same concerns since he had been on board and attempted to address the issue through the issuance of a guidance in a form of a bulletin, and hoped that that would answer some of the questions, address some of the concerns, and quite frankly, that approach didn't work. And we continue to get questions and concerns on the part of the insurance community as far as what could and should be done as far as consultants and insurance agents. The director decided to form a working group, an ad hoc working group, to get together some of the concerned parties, both from the agent side and from the company side. And so we had a well-rounded group of individuals who represent pretty much the gamut of agencies across the state and the companies that are affected, and tried to look at this issue of insurance consultants. And the result of that work of that committee is what you see in Senate Bill 61. It really accomplishes three major items. First of all, it was pretty much a consensus that if you're going to be acting as an insurance consultant, you should have an insurance agent license. Not a separate license, but just the same license that an insurance agent would have. Secondarily, the principle that you can't act as a consultant and agent for the same customer for the same piece of business. In other words, you can't double dip. So if you are going to consult for an individual for a particular product, you can't also, you know, collect a fee and also collect a commission. But if you want to represent somebody both as a consultant and an agent and get a fee on one product and then turn around and get a commission on the other, that's fine. So that's what this bill lays out, is that the dividing line is you just can't double dip for the same product. Also, we wanted to make sure if you, in fact, are going to collect a fee in addition to apart from a premium, that that be laid out, and you're going to do it as a consultant, that be laid out in writing. So this bill requires, if you're going to act as a consultant for one of your customers, that consulting fees need to be laid out in the form of a written agreement between you and the customer. So those are the real essentials of this bill that at least take the first step in getting some of these issues resolved so that insurance agents and insurance consultants understand where the dividing line is, what they can and can't do. With that, I will stand by before I leave, though I will mention that there is one amendment that's going to be offered by Denny Duncan. We have reviewed that, and we are supportive of that amendment. So with that, I'll stand by. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponent testimony? Will this be proponent or opponent?
Proponent.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, excuse me, Senator Buell. Senate Bill 71 was a product of quite a bit of the
Senate. By yourself.
I'm sorry. Dennis Duncan, representing Allstate. I'm a registered lobbyist for Allstate Insurance Company. I apologize. Senate Bill 61 was the product of quite a bit of discussion over the course of the summer and early fall with respect to the reimbursement or consultation fees that are charged for consultants. And I think a lot of insurers and industry people had an opportunity to be a part of that process. For whatever reason, Allstate Insurance took a little bit longer to review this bill. And while we are supportive of the concept of the bill and appear here in support of the bill, we have had discussions with the Division of Insurance relative to the potential amendment of this bill to address one concern which Allstate had and discussed with the Division of Insurance. And with the indulgence of the chair, I'd like to pass this out if I could. While the page is passing that out, I might add that I did share this with the Division of Insurance, and as Randy has indicated, the Division has had an opportunity to review it and approves of this particular amendment to the bill, and I appreciate the consideration shown by the Division to allow us to amend their bill at this late state.
The amendment is now being dispersed. Just to confirm, this is Amendment 61JA?
That's correct. And if with the indulgence...
Chair will grant you leniency to talk to the amendment.
Thank you very much. What the amendment does is it allows an insurer to prohibit an insurance producer from collecting a fee from an insurance customer for services provided as a consultant. As Randy had indicated, the text of this bill may in fact deal with this issue, but some companies, particularly Allstate, felt that they have what we call captive agents. In other words, an Allstate agent may be an agent that is only contracted to Allstate Insurance. So they want to have, Allstate wants to have the ability to, if they deem it appropriate, to prohibit one of their agents, which in our statutes are called insurance producers, from collecting a fee from an insurance customer for services provided as a consultant. They want to have the ability to do so. It doesn't say that they have to do that, but the companies, particularly Allstate Insurance, feels that it is important that if they wish to do so, they can prevent their own captive agents, whom they would have a contract with, from collecting both a fee in terms of a commission on the sale of the insurance and as a consultant. And that's what this amendment does. Otherwise, we're in full agreement with the with the bill, and we would ask your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 61 and Amendment 61JA as presented. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. I'll stand by.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 61?
Hi, my name is Jimmy Schneider with Great Plains Brokerage. We're an MMA company of Sioux Falls. I'm essentially a wholesale insurance distributor. We're the exclusive marketing arm for the Sanford Health Plan. We also market and distribute numerous lines of what they call excess surplus lines, property casualty insurance, as well as a wide array of ancillary benefits, which would be your vision plans, your dental plans, your group life, group disability, that sort of thing. Chairman, thank you for having us. Committee, thank you very much. I'd like to compliment Director Scheiber and Deputy Moses for doing a nice piece of work on this deal. We did come out here in April and had a meeting to express, as agents and distributors of insurance, that this was something that was needed. I like it for three reasons. Number one, it takes nothing away. A large employer sponsoring benefits for their employees and their families can still operate and do business the exact same way they can today. 61 does not interfere with any of that. Second thing is it affords the insurance professionals another way to service a client who may choose to do business this way. There will be those employers who, in providing benefits, will prefer to have a consultant relationship on their major medical, but yet they also offer other products like a dental or a vision. And what you may not realize is on a vision or a dental product, you can't always ask the carrier to write that as a net a commission product. You can't necessarily get them to take the commission out of it. So right now the law is a little bit limiting in that if you wanted to have one insurance producer represent all of your benefits for all of your employees, but you wanted a consulting relationship just on one line, currently we can't do that. 61 gives us that luxury. So in that regard, it's good not only for the insurance producer, but then it's also good for the employer, which is my third reason I like it. It offers them one more avenue of protecting their employees, from the benefits. And the benefits are a big deal. I mean, this is the second largest expense that every employer has. It's one of the chief ways that they retain and attract new help, and it matters. Kind of relates to the earlier motion you had a little bit ago. So I'd like to thank you again for bringing us out. I want to recognize that my son Liam Christian Schneider is with me today because I forgot to call school and say he wouldn't be there. So
the chair will put it on public record that I do see a child. I'm assuming you are Liam. What? And I have pressed the panic button. The truant officer is on his way. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 61?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deb Fisher-Clemens with Avera, representing the Avera Health Plans. We are a health insurance carrier in South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, insuring 26,000 policyholders and 40,000 self-funded members. We support the passage of Senate Bill 61. We were a part of the discussions to bring this bill to its fruition. It brings clarity to the role of consultants and helps us as a carrier to assure that our groups and clients are handled in a consistent manner, which is very important to us. And I thank you for your support of Senate Bill 61.
Any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll move to opponent testimony on Senate Bill 61. Hearing none, we will close and open it up for questions for the committee. We'll say questions and or discussion. Action. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I move to pass.
Sorry. Yes. The chair will remind that we do have an amendment 61JA. Sorry, my bad.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Maher.
At this time, I'd like to move amendment 61JA.
Thank you very much. A move to move amendment 61JA by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Johnston. This can be a voice vote, right? This we will do on a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay? No. Nope. And I did not vote nay. I was just saying. So, Amendment 61JA is passed and moved in. So now we will move to consideration, discussion, and or action on Senate Bill 61 as amended. Senator Johnston.
I moved Senate Bill 61 as amended. Do pass.
motion of 61, Senate Bill 61 as amended, do pass, moved by Senator Johnston. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Buell. Any discussion on that? With that, the Secretary will please call the roll on Senate Bill 61. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay.
Legolka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Is unanimous.
Senate Bill 61, receiving a unanimous consideration, will move due pass. Senator Johnston.
Move consent.
A move consent by Senator Johnston. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Maher. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, nay. And we'll just do a voice vote on that. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Senate Bill 61, as amended, will be placed on the consent calendar. Next, we'll move on to Senate Bill 67. And the chair will say, if you have already identified yourself and your credentials, you can just say who you are. It's already part of the public testimony, so we don't need to go back through your qualifications, but we thank you for that. But please do identify yourself by name. Senate Bill 67.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy Moses again. Senate Bill 67 deals with health maintenance organizations, or as they're more are widely known in the industry as HMOs. This bill accomplishes essentially three main goals that we're trying to get done. First of all, you will see a lot of references in the bill to deleting the Secretary of Health from a role as in the HMO chapter. The Secretary of Health is under current law, in addition to the Division of Insurance, charged with being a regulator of health maintenance organizations, or HMOs. That office determined, and in fact was a part of their draft legislation last year in the red tape bill, that they really didn't think that they needed to play a role. We really didn't need two regulators for HMOs. One should be sufficient. And so at their suggestion, we worked with the Department of Health in putting together this legislation so that Secretary of Department of Health would no longer play a role in the regulation of HMOs. So you'll see a lot of that language is deleted. It just means we're down to one regulator instead of two on HMOs. Secondarily, there's also a lot of other sections in this bill that are being repealed. And the reason for that is that over the years, this body's enacted a number of managed care legislation requirements. But the bulk of those requirements didn't go in the HMO chapter. They went in other chapters because they applied to other kinds of health insurers as well. And so what you had is certain requirements on managed care that applied to HMOs. With HMO requirements, then you also had these managed care requirements outside the HMO chapter 5841. And so what this bill does is get rid of those duplicate requirements and sometimes conflicting requirements. So we're getting down to where HMOs can follow just one set of rules rather than two set of rules with regard to a number of these issues, whether we're talking managed care or examinations or any of these things. So what we're really doing is cleaning up the code to get rid of duplicate and conflicting statutes. And then the third component of this legislation is that a few years back, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, updated the NAIC model. And when they did that, South Dakota didn't immediately follow suit. As a matter of fact, we have yet to adopt those revisions to the HMO Model Act that was adopted on the national level. So what this legislation also does is incorporate those changes to the NAIC model into our HMO law as well. I'll mention some of the highlights of that. You'll see some references in this legislation to what's called risk-bearing entities. And what we're talking about there is, let's say we have a group of medical providers who want to accept some insurance risk from an HMO. Say, for instance, they want to say that I will service your clients at an X amount per individual. We'll agree to give them however much treatment they need, and we'll accept that flat fee. Well, that they might actually expend more care or less care. They may get a profit or they may take a loss, but they're taking the risk in that situation. If the HMO is going to enter into that kind of arrangement. We want to make sure that they have the right contractual protections in place and that the Division of Insurance can monitor those. And that's that this bill takes care of that issue. We also hadn't really been clear on limited service organizations, whether or not they could form HMOs. We the law is really gray on that. We certainly had no objection to dentists or other types of limited types of HMO getting together and just only performing HMO services or contracts for their profession. This is allowed for specifically under the legislation. It was also never clear that, for instance, HMOs could issue or engage in preferred provider organization type arrangements. They've been going on since day one, since HMOs have been in this state. So we thought we should clarify that and make real clear what the intent of the statutes were when we redrafted this chapter. So we believe this bill adds a lot of clarity to the HMO chapter, gets rid of a lot of superfluous stuff, and actually reduces a layer of regulation in that we're down to one regulator instead of two. I did pass out three amendments, Mr. Chairman, and if it's okay, I'd like to speak to those three amendments.
Granted.
Thank you. The three amendments are, and let me get my glasses out so I don't misread them. The first one is 67JA, and that deals with a nonprofit status of an HMO. When we cross-referenced the other chapters in this bill, and the other chapters did not provide for nonprofits, we did not want to prevent our existing nonprofit HMOs from continuing to do business. So we wanted to make sure that was clear, and this 67JA clarifies that so that a currently licensed nonprofit or a new nonprofit can continue to do business as an HMO. We certainly don't want to preclude nonprofits from doing business as an HMO. 67JB deals with pharmacy benefit managers. There was a concern by the PBMs that they would have to get licensed separately in addition to their PBM license they already have as a TPA. This clarifies that we would not require them to be licensed just because they're doing business with an HMO. And then finally, 67JC, we found that in the list of providers that HMOs can contract with, that dentists were left out of the picture. We could not think of a good reason why they should be left out, and this clarifies this, that HMOs can contract with dentists for services. Those are the three amendments I have, and I am aware that Larry Mann has one additional amendment he'll be offering that we've worked with them on and we're fine with. So that is the bill and the amendments, and I'd be glad to stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 67? First, the chair will ask the committee members, has everyone received the amendments 67JA, JB, and JC? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I have 67JD.
Okay. I'd like to circulate. Thank you. We are giving the page a workout today.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Larry Mann, represent the South Dakota CPA Society, and there were just a couple of issues that came up in a review of CPA staff with a couple of items, and I know that they seem perhaps minor, but this is probably the appropriate time to address them. If you look on page 13, line 3 of the bill, we believe it's important to note that any CPA should be registered or certified CPA in their area of jurisdiction. In other words, there are going to be some entities from out of state that are going to use out of state CPAs to prepare the financial statements. If it's in South Dakota, of course, they'd be covered under South Dakota codified law. We cannot compel an out-of-state CPA doing work for an out-of-state company to comply with South Dakota law. So we just want to make sure that whoever provides these statements is a certified public accountant in their area. On page 20, simply some comfort language for the CPAs is that it actually talks about using gap, or just identifying what gap is. It's the in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles of the United States. That occurs both on page 20, line 8, and page 20, line 15. And I didn't discuss this with Mr. Moses, but I'm not sure, Randy, if you look at page 13, line 4, the parent A, B, and C, I'm not so sure if referring to the gap requirements eliminates the need to enumerate those three items. That might be an additional part of that amendment if you think that it's appropriate to do that.
Mr. Mann, would you...
I'm sorry?
Would you just talk further about... I mean, are you proposing an amendment?
Well,
or?
I honestly, as I sat there and reflected on the language that's there, if you look on page 13, it says that...
13, line 4?
Was it? It would be line 4. Okay. If you look at that, it says that reflecting at least... A, B, and C, and it just occurred to me as I read through this whether that's necessary if you use generally accepted accounting principles. Do we necessarily need to enumerate it? I'm not suggesting that that be changed, just something for your consideration. The other ones are the ones that my client were more concerned about.
Okay. Any further proponent testimony? Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 67?
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Pankratz, registered lobbyist for Sanford Health. I thought for a minute there I was going to get a hamstring tied up. So I'm fortunately for all of us, that didn't happen. So we are here in support of Senate Bill 67 with the amendment that was proposed by Mr. Moses concerning the nonprofits so that they aren't excluded by including them. So we would be in support of that with the amendment.
Any further proponent testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Hewitt. I'm the president of the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations, lobbyist for them as well. We also support this legislation. It really does create a semblance of order for managed care and HMO products in particular, and I would emphasize that our support is contingent upon Mr. Moses' amendments being adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponent testimony? Hearing none, we'll close to opponent testimony. Any opponent testimony? The chair, this isn't necessarily a rebuttal, but Mr. Moses, if you would have any comment upon Mr. Mann's testimony, I will grant you just a short comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did get a chance to talk to Larry just briefly after he stepped down, and I mentioned that that might not be the appropriate place to put this. There's also what's called statutory accounting for, it's in the insurance world, a little different methodology, and I wasn't 100% sure which one applied here, and so I think on the safe side, we're just better leaving it be.
That would be the chair's recommendation as well. Okay, thank you. We will close for testimony and open it up for questions by the committee. Any questions? Then we'll move to discussion and or action.
Chairman?
Senator Maher.
I move 67JA at this time.
Actually, yes, thank you for that. We do have four amendments. Senator Maher has moved Amendment 67JA, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comment on that? We will vote all in favor. We'll vote aye. Nay, voice vote. So all in favor vote aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment 67JA passed. Chair will entertain a motion on 67JB.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I moved 67JB.
Amendment 67JB moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment 67JB passed. Chair will entertain a motion on 67JC.
Chair.
Senator Johnston.
Moved 67JB. Juliet Charlie.
Good use of the terminology. Senator Johnston moves Amendment 67JC, seconded by Senator Maher. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I'm on a roll.
Oh, Senator Johnston.
I move 67 Juliet Delta.
Amendment 67JD, moved by Senator Johnston. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Amendment 67JD does pass by voice vote. With that, we'll move to discussion on Senate Bill 67 as amended. Any discussion from the committee? Hearing none, we'll move to action by the committee. Senator Bogalka.
I move we pass Senate Bill 67 as amended four times.
Thank you, Senator Bogalka. Do I have a second on Senator Bogalka's movement to pass? Moved by Senator Bogalka, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comment on that motion? Anyone else? The vote in front of us is do pass on Senate Bill 67 as amended four times. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline?
Aye.
Is unanimous.
It is unanimous. Senate Bill 67, as amended, will move to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. The final one, and I do want to get to this, there is no opponent testimony on the following bill, and the persons who have come to testify have been waiting throughout all this. So we will move to House Bill 1036. Did I get that number right? Yes, House Bill 1036. Okay, we haven't technically moved into House Bill 1036 yet, so there's a motion for placing Senate Bill 67 as amended on consent by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Buell. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Senate Bill 67 will be placed in the consent calendar. Good work. Thank you. Now, House Bill 1036.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jenna Howell. I'm the Director of Legal and Regulatory Services for the Department of Public Safety. We are bringing this bill after working to implement the large 911 bill that was passed last year. And in working with the Department of Revenue, we realized that there was the small loophole in 34459, which said basically that anybody could always keep the administration costs, even if they were not correctly filing and remitting the surcharge as required elsewhere in the statute. This simply cleans up this loophole. It gives the benefit of the administration costs to those who are following the rest of the law and is a penalty, so to speak, for those who do not timely file and remit. If there are any questions, I will stand by. Thank you.
Any further proponents? Hearing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1036? Hearing none, the committee will open for questions from the committee. Hearing none, we'll move to discussion and or action by the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lederman.
Move due pass.
Motion of due pass moved by Senator Lederman.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Johnston. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous.
The vote is unanimous and House Bill 1036 do pass.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lederman. Motion of consent moved by Senator Lederman, seconded by Senator Johnston. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much, committee. With that, the committee will, the chair will say, please leave your binders if you have them, and the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Buell. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.